Attention, you're listening to The Antidote to Liberalism. The active ingredient in this program is common sense, which has been documented to prevent and even cure liberalism. Be advised that listening may cause you to lean to the right. The doctor will be with you momentarily. Here's your host, Todd Huff.
Well, there's been a siding of presidential candidates Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders as they took to the, not to the debate stage. No. We went to a town hall stage last night to answer questions that were undoubtedly approved by Huma Abedin, the Democrat Party apparatus. Maybe written by Bill Clinton himself. Who knows? James Carville maybe got into the mix. That's how these things go. So the questions were asked of candidates Bernie Sanders, the nutty professor, and of course Hillary Clinton, who may soon one day, not in the too distant future, be wearing a orange jumpsuit and a ankle bracelet during her debates on stage as she seeks the Democrat Party nomination for president. But they came out of hiding last night. But look, it's the same sort of thing. I didn't watch this thing. I didn't, honestly, to be 100% candid with you, I didn't even know this thing was on. And I consider myself pretty much pretty well informed on these things. I saw the hashtag trending on Twitter, Dim Town Hall. Saw some clips from it, which we'll talk about that here in a little bit, but we have that. We have President Obama going to a mosque to apparently lecture Christians. More on that as well. A mosque, incidentally, where that has been under the investigation of the FBI. No word if these are the same agents that are investigating Hillary Clinton and her email scandal, her inappropriate use of national security documents and information. So, as usual, lots going on in the world, in the news today, in American politics. Thanks for joining us. Email, should you want to contact me, is todd@theantidotoliberalism.com, or you can connect with me on Twitter @CommonSenseGear. But I actually want to start with something else that happened. This is in the Washington Examiner. House Speaker Paul Ryan was a guest yesterday of the Heritage Foundation, and look, I've got nothing but good things to say about the Heritage Foundation. I'm actually a Heritage Action Sentinel, which means I'm involved with their the group that does the political organizing, those that try to enable the ground troops and get people moving, voting, organizing for conservative action and ideas. I'm involved with that group. In fact, I saw the presidential candidates attend a summit, the Heritage Action Summit, I believe is what it was called, last September. And great people, love the Heritage Foundation. They're friends of this program. Now, Paul Ryan, who was their guest, look, Paul Ryan's a Republican. He doesn't score well conservatively, you know, when he's reviewed by people like the Heritage Foundation, by people like Conservative Review, and so on and so forth. But Paul Ryan gives a speech, and essentially, and this is coming from the Washington Examiner, the message is for conservatives not to revolt against his party's leadership, against him, basically, as he's now Speaker, the leader of the House of Representatives. And I want to read you a couple of quotes of his. And we're going to talk about these because I think these are very, very important in the way that the elected politician views issues and problems and how they're going to be fixed and so forth, and how the voter, how you and I, how the conservatives living our lives, going about our business outside of Washington, D.C., outside of that bubble of nonsense and just pure liberalism. I lived there, by the way, for for a semester while I attended American University in Washington, D.C., on the northwest side of town there. The city's amazing. I mean, I love the monuments, the history, going to Arlington, you know, seeing the Jefferson and the Lincoln memorials, the Washington Monument. The Capitol building is, I think, one of the most beautiful buildings I've ever seen. Maybe even the most beautiful building I've ever seen. The Supreme Court, we heard arguments in the Supreme Court. All sorts of things, a beautiful city, but it is crazy. It is isolated as unto itself. It is a place that, frankly, is void of common sense. It really is. They're insulated from the issues that face you and I in no matter what city you're in right now, no matter what town you're in. The problems that they create and then that they're immune from by living inside that DC bubble are numerous. So this is what he says, Paul Ryan, addressing a group of conservatives put together by the Heritage Foundation. He says, quote, "The left would love nothing more. They would love nothing more than for a fragmented conservative movement to stand in a circular firing squad and fire so that progressives can win by default," end quote. Now, when I hear talk like this, it's as though he's saying, get in line, follow our leadership, because we take enough flack from the other side. We don't need it from our base. It reminds me of a conversation, candidly, I had with one of a member of the House of Representatives, where he told me that those of us, well, it was actually at a Heritage event. So it was a Tea Party crowd. It was a conservative audience. And he told me that, quote, "you guys didn't have our back in the 2012 election." This is what he told me. And I said, "you guys?" I said, "I thought we were on the same team, such and such," whatever his name, I'm not going to mention his name, Congressman X, "I thought we were on the same team." And that's a bizarre way of looking at it. It's we the people. It's not my job to support any candidate. And I don't on here. I support the ideas set forth. I do not support this idea of asking the conservatives to be patient yet again. We won in 2012. Be patient. We'll start legislating. We'll start controlling the agenda and the narrative someday in the future. 2014, we win yet again, rather convincingly. Some would even say, in a dominant fashion. We won the election. We're told we'll fight that next time, next time. Next time we'll stand on principle. Next time we'll do this. I mean, the cat is out of the bag here. The genie's out of the bottle. There's no putting back the anger of the conservative voter, of the everyday conservative voter that looks at his nation, looks at his country, looks at what he sees coming out of Washington, D.C., and is absolutely sickened by it. There's one way to stop the anger, and that is to legislate conservatively. Don't tell us not to be angry, Paul Ryan. Don't tell us not to revolt. Why don't you lead? Why don't you push through conservative principles? The people are behind you. Who cares if the left is going to attack you? Ignore that. I don't understand this. Please don't get mad at me. The other side already is. I mean, that's what this sounds like to me. If this is the mindset, you have no business being a leader. Who cares? I don't care if every Democrat in that House and Senate hates my guts. It's not my objective to go there and to make them hate me. But if the ideas that I stand for are what makes them hate me, I'm not going to change that. Who does that? That is weak. That is not leadership. I don't expect him to change the minds of these guys. These guys are radicals. But don't let them persuade you either on core issues. I'm not saying that, look, I of course, there's got to be some sort of a compromise. But a compromise means that both parties give, and unfortunately, it's only one side that gives, and it's always our side. They always have an R in front of their name, and then they always promise us next time they're going to fight harder. He went on to tell us not to take the bait when Obama tries to provoke the GOP. How might he do this? How might Obama be trying to provoke the Republicans? Well, apparently, the article says this. He issued it while warning that conservatives may have to ignore some of President Obama's unilateral executive actions, which Ryan described as disastrous, designed to prevent the Republican Party from uniting around a conservative agenda. End quote. That's from the article. That's not a quote from Ryan. But basically, what Ryan is saying here is, we may just have to ignore some of these unilateral executive decisions so that we can solidify around our conservative ideas. What? So we're supposed to ignore. We're supposed to let this president do whatever he wants just so we can get our ducks in a row? Is that what I'm supposed to believe? I mean, Speaker Ryan, one of the things that this group of people that you're lecturing, that you're pleading with to not be upset at you, one of the things that they're upset about is the very idea that President Obama can act unilaterally. That is called unconstitutional. In fact, as you know, if you've listened to this show, I don't like to use the word unconstitutional. We're going to start calling it anti-constitutional. It's just not a little bit outside the bounds. It is the antithesis of the Constitution. It is the antithesis of what is supposed to happen in our republic, in our balance of powers. These are distractions? How are these are not distractions. What universe are you coming from? Distractions? Distractions is talking about his golf game. Distractions is talking about his jumper. Distractions is talking about Michelle Obama's triceps. Distractions are not something that is fundamental to the American system of government. And don't tell me to wait, hold on, let's get our conservative group all on the same page before we get distracted by President Obama's overreach of power. I mean, this is precisely one of the things you're there to do, to maintain a balance of powers. And if this guy is allowed to run completely free and clear of any consequence whatsoever, which we've already told him multiple times, we're not going to oppose him. We've heard Mitch McConnell say this recently. Now we don't want to oppose Obama because we don't want to cause problems for the Republican presidential candidates. Ironically, all the presidential candidates are running strongly against what President Obama says and does. But Congress has to act differently. So says our leadership. And it's definitely what it sounds like here from Paul Ryan. I'll read one more quote for this, and we're going to stop and take a break. Paul Ryan says, quote, "When voices in the conservative movement demand things that they know we can't achieve with a Democrat in the White House, all it does is depress our base and in turn help Democrats stay in the White House." I have to be honest with you. I have zero understanding of this loser mentality. We constantly criticize our presidential candidates in the sense of, and I'm not saying not to scrutinize them, figure out which one is best. I am perfectly fine with that. But we act like, oh man, I don't know if this guy's electable to the general population. Oh my goodness, what are we going to do in the general election if this guy or girl is our candidate? Oh my goodness, what about this? What about the way they speak? Oh my goodness, what are we going to do? We wring our hands. We sit in fear. We act as though the people that we're running against are unbeatable. We have a self-avowed socialist who is a blubbering crazy man when it comes to capitalism and his preference, which is socialism, hardcore leftist socialism. That's candidate number one. Candidate number two is being indicted by being investigated by the FBI, who may very well be indicted or have an indictment recommended by the FBI. We'll see where that goes. I mean, she has a list of reasons. She is unlikable. She is fabricated and phony. She's involved in scandal after scandal. This Benghazi thing, the way that she handled that, and these dead Americans because of an ineptness upon the part of the State Department, and then the cover-up, and then national security being housed on a private email server. I mean, it is absolutely bizarre that we think that we have to tiptoe around the daisies, all the while the left can put forth these lunatics, unlikable Hillary Clinton, and a lunatic, the nutty professor Bernie Sanders, and we act like everything we do has monumental consequences, and we can't do anything, and conservatives are too demanding. You haven't done anything. This, if you look at how we've legislated, we won in 2010 and 2014 in big ways, and I challenge you to show me where the legislative action taken by Congress is any different than it would have been if the liberals were in charge. I mean this. Absolute sophistry, absolute weak leadership. This sort of thing has to stop. I have no sympathy, Paul Ryan. Get the job done. Quit complaining. I don't want to hear that it's conservatives' fault. Everywhere I turn, we'll get to Obama after in a bit, talking to the Muslims, blaming Christians. Everywhere I look, my groups are being blamed. Christians being blamed. Conservatives are being blamed. Well, all the while, they're the only ones with any answers. Anyway, I've got to stop and take a break. More in a minute. You're listening to The Antidote to Liberalism. Be back in a minute. Make sure your booster shots are up to date by signing up for our free monthly email newsletter. It's educational, it's fun, and it's free. Sign up today by going to theantidotetoliberalism.com/newsletter. That's theantidotetoliberalism.com/newsletter. For you, the listeners of The Antidote to Liberalism, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the opportunity to check out their service. I've been a member of Audible since May of 2014, and I love it. I've listened to novels, books on business, political books, you name it. In fact, one of my most recent downloads was given to me by one of our listeners, Ben Carson's America the Beautiful. What a good man and solid presidential candidate. But if you'd rather check out a great novel instead, I highly recommend The 12th Imam by Joel Rosenberg. Of course, you'll want to get the rest of his books in the series after that, too. To download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/antidote. Again, that's audibletrial.com/antidote for your free audiobook. There's nothing to lose with this free trial, so why not give it a try? I mean, the more I think about this, the more bothered I am by this. What kind of leadership is this? I mean, this is the crowd that tells me that Ted Cruz and Mike Lee and the others that have actually tried to get things done, that have actually stood on hilltops for battle, they're constantly told, this isn't the one to fight for, not this one either, we'll get them next time. I mean, when does this end? They are completely isolated, they are completely in a fantasy world. I mean, the Republic is on fire. The Constitution is on fire. Constitutional conservatism has united. It is united in a big way. Where do you think the Tea Party came from? Where do you think all of these blogs and conservative media outlets, online conservative, I mean, there's countless places that have arisen from nothing, from everyday average Americans who are tired of it. So the motivation for the start of this show. I mean, I didn't have a career in broadcasting. I didn't have a background in radio. We started this because we are tired. We are engaging in this fight. And apparently, it's still not time to fight for Paul Ryan and the Republicans. We've got to get our ducks in a row before we lob the first volley. Just incredible. It's weak. It's inexcusable. I have no sympathy for this. And this is not personal against Paul Ryan. I'm sure he's a nice guy. I'm sure he's got some ideas that he and I can agree upon. But I don't care what idea you have in your head. I care what you do with it. It's not enough to have the right ideas. You have to be able to push through the things that need to be done. And sometimes we're not even talking about philosophy. We're talking about stopping a guy that's clearly outside the bounds of the Constitution. The anti-constitutional Obama himself. And we can't do anything about it. Not now. Wait till next time. I'm sick of it. Democrats and the left are on the march consistently. They never cease. They never sleep. They're constantly thinking of ways that they can further their agenda, increase the size of government, take away personal liberty, make us not have the choice, tell us what we can eat and drive and think and who can, you know, whatever else they want, whatever other desires they have. And we've got to sit there and get our ducks in a row before we even think about mounting a response. Anyway, sick and tired of this stuff, Paul Ryan. Inexcusable. It really is. Inexcusable. Oh, enough about that. So, something else I mentioned at the top of the show, that the Democrats were at a town hall last night, and I didn't watch. I didn't watch because, A, I didn't know. B, I'm not used to seeing the Democrat candidates because, candidly, they keep them in hiding. And as I've said on here multiple times, I don't blame them. And C, I don't know if I would have watched anyway. I was working on some other things related to this program. In fact, you know what? I'll go ahead and tell you about that because you're going to notice some additional changes here moving forward with the format. But I'm in conversations with, and I can't tell you any details yet, but some good news on getting this show distributed in front of more people. And so I was looking at, you know, reviewing the paperwork for this agreement to be carried on, to be streamed through this conservative source, online source that is for conservative talk. Reviewing that, talking with some people I admire, I respect their opinions, just talking through, because there are some minor changes I'm going to have to make to this program to fit the format, and they are minor. I don't think you're going to notice them as a listener. But nonetheless, there are some changes. The total program length is going to have to be increased a little bit. I'm probably going to have an extra, maybe a commercial break or two. Looking at getting some additional sponsors. And now that we might have a bigger audience, that, you know, we can maybe reach out and get some new folks to sponsor the show. So anyway, that's what I was doing last night. I wasn't watching Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders tell me which one of them was more progressive, i.e. more of a socialist. I wasn't engaged in seeing who could give away the most freebies to the voter base. I wasn't engaged in who had the most awkward moment, whether it was Hillary's laugh or Bernie's comments or Hillary trying to explain why she took a pretty big paycheck from, what, Goldman Sachs. How she was blaming the infamous vast right-wing conspiracy, of which now I'm hoping, and I hope I'm an official member of that. I've not been on any of the conference calls for this conspiracy, but you know, now that the show is growing, maybe I can get an invitation, and maybe I can get on these conference calls where we can conspire collectively to take down Mrs. Clinton. I mean, that's what we're supposed to believe. That's what a conspiracy is. A conspiracy is the gathering together of two or more people to, you know, accomplish an ends, accomplish a mission, usually meant in a, you know, in a way where you're tearing down something, where you're going to conspire to commit a criminal act or something along those lines. And that's intentional, by the way. The right wing is nothing but a bunch of people that are conspiring to overthrow the establishment because they hate Hillary Clinton, they hate women, they hate minorities. Anyway, didn't watch it, but I do have clips, and we're going to show the or share those here in a minute. We're going to take a second break, but when we get back, we're going to share the clips from the town hall. I about said debate. It's not a debate, but from the town hall last night, and going to get a little bit into Obama lecturing Christians while speaking in front of a group of Muslims in, I don't know, Baltimore, I believe. So anyway, sit tight. We'll be back in just a minute. Are you looking for an alternative to employer-provided health insurance? Maybe your rates have skyrocketed, or maybe your employer doesn't provide health insurance. And then you visited healthcare.gov and realized how much of a debacle Obamacare really is. Why don't you take a look at what my family and I do for our healthcare needs? We're members of Samaritan Ministries, and we absolutely love it. If you're looking for a biblical, non-insurance approach to your healthcare needs, visit theantidotetoliberalism.com/healthcare to learn more. And as an added bonus, my listeners will receive an exclusive $50 credit, but only when you complete the application on my website. Go to theantidotetoliberalism.com to apply or to get more information. My family and I love it, and we think you will too. God bless. Well, welcome back to the Internet to Liberalism. I am your host, Todd Huff. Today is what? Today is Thursday. It is February the 4th. New Hampshire's in, the primaries of New Hampshire are in, what, 5 days? Hard to believe. Pleasure to be here. Thanks for joining us. Email again should you want to reach out or connect with me. Email is todd@theantidotetoliberalism.com. Or you can connect with us on Twitter. The Twitter handle is at Common Sense Gear. So anyway, before the break, I had mentioned Democrat town hall last night, and I promised you that we had a few clips to share with you. So the first is Hillary Clinton talking about the vast right-wing conspiracy and how she's going to deal with right-wing attacks from right-wing lunatics or what have you. Painting the picture that only the lovable Mrs. Clinton can do. And this is the exchange between her, the moderator, by the way, or it wasn't a moderator, it was a host, I guess, because there wasn't anything to moderate. It was a town hall meeting. The candidates were not on the stage together. But the moderator, or whatever you want to call them, the one that hosted the town hall, the town hall, was Anderson Cooper on CNN. So this was the exchange between a member of the audience who asked the question with Mrs. Clinton and with Anderson Cooper as he pressed to get Hillary to further explain the vast right-wing conspiracy that still daily plots against her. So here it is.
How are you going to defend yourself against right-wing attacks?
Well, Sean, I've had a lot of practice.
Do you still believe there's a vast right-wing conspiracy?
Don't you?
I'm asking you.
Yeah, it's gotten even better funded. You know, they brought in some new multi-billionaires to pump the money in.
She is so embarrassing. That laugh. I mean, it is... That is a phony, fake, canned... I don't even want to call it a laugh. Someone's told her somewhere along the way to disarm your opponents, just laugh. And she said, okay, like this? I'm sorry. What is wrong with this lady? Am I supposed to believe that that's an authentic, genuine laugh? Oh, my goodness. And then she asked Anderson Cooper, well, don't you believe there's a vast right-wing conspiracy? I mean, Anderson's probably thinking, well, yeah, but I can't say that, Hillary. I can't say that up here. I've got to try to make people think I'm at least objective. It's not my job to answer it. What do you think? What say you? Well, there's money. There's new billionaires pumping money into this vast right-wing conspiracy against me. So says Hillary Clinton. Who, by the way, is a grandmother. I'm not sure if you knew this. She's a woman, first and foremost. I don't know if she's mentioned this on the campaign trail or not. She is a woman. She is a grandmother. And she is going to be a grandmother for the second time, as her daughter Chelsea is expecting here later in the summer. I'm not sure if that has been mentioned on the campaign trail or not. But I just wanted to do that public service announcement for Hillary Clinton. She won't be able to pass along that information if she's behind bars. She just gets one call from in there. But anyway, Hillary's up here cackling. She makes a comment about billionaires, which is ironic because in addition to this little treat that Mrs. Clinton had given us during the town hall last night, there was also this exchange regarding the amount of money she had taken from Goldman Sachs. Here it is.
But did you have to be paid $675,000?
Well, I don't know. That's what they offered. So, every Secretary of State that I know has done that.
But that's usually once they're office and not running for an office again.
Well, I didn't
know. Must have known.
To be honest, I wasn't committed to running. I didn't know whether I would or not.
You didn't think you were going to run for president again?
I didn't. When I was Secretary of State, several times I said, I think I'm done.
I'm not sure I really set that soundbite up the right way. What happened there was Hillary was questioned about getting $675,000 in speaking fees from Goldman Sachs. And she was having to defend that. Of course, Bernie Sanders is out there saying it all corporate money. Apparently, if it passes through a corporation, it is by very definition corrupted and evil money. I'm interested how he expects people to take paychecks under that philosophically sound viewpoint on money. But nonetheless, this puts Hillary on the defensive because now we know the left is the home, the new home of the socialists in America. So she has to defend taking money from Goldman Sachs to speak. Now, you and I know that Hillary's speeches are not worth $675,000. So we're going to ignore that fact for just a moment. And we're going to talk about the free market and capitalism. I don't care what this woman gets for speeches. I happen to think that she's getting paid for influence more than the content of her speeches. But be that as it may, receiving money from Goldman Sachs to give a speech is nowhere near the top 5 million things that disqualifies her from being president of the United States. But to those on the left, it's a big deal. Because corporate money is evil. It has to be. Because corporations are evil. Don't you get it? Don't you get it? Hence, we have Bernie Sanders up there telling us about the one percenters and how they're destroying America and how they're taking wealth from, those that are in college, and that these people that are wealthy are not sharing it enough and not giving free education and free puppies and free massages and free whatever you want, just free. Just have the wealthy pay for it. and the wealthy, according to the paradigm that Bernie Sanders has created for us, thanks in part for the help given him by Karl Marx and other socialists and communists throughout the history of the world. But according to his paradigm, his worldview, the wealthy are there to oppose giving help, lending a helping hand, paying their fair share, what have you, so that the rest of us, the average Joes in America, can live happy, healthy, productive lives. So she has to answer for this in front of the Democrat audience, the socialist crowd, because this is a big deal to them. And of course, her answer, candidly, I kind of liked her first answer. Why did you take $675,000 from Goldman Sachs? Well, because that's what they offered. I think I found a comment that I can agree with Mrs. Clinton on, because that's what they offered. Now, again, we're ignoring what Goldman Sachs is paying for, which, again, I challenge that it's really the content of her speech. It's more about the influence they might be able to have over her should she become president of the United States. Heaven forbid that. But I'm not going to get into that. I'm just going to say she has to defend getting paid large sums of money. Now, keep in mind, this is the woman that tells us she was, her and her husband had left the White House broke, just dirt poor. They had houses, plural, to pay for. Chelsea was in school, had to pay for that, because she was not going to the public school, I'll tell you that. Chelsea was not, she's not of that, that's just not her style. The Clintons are not going to put their kids through that. They deserve better than that. So they left the White House dead broke, dirt poor, they had houses to pay for. And they had one child that they had to send to some very prestigious and expensive universities, wherever she attended. I don't even know. Don't care. But she went from being dead broke to giving $675,000 speeches to Goldman Sachs or whomever was paid for by Goldman Sachs. And now she has to answer for that. In the speech or the clip before that, she had told us how billionaires were lining up to join the vast right-wing conspiracy to overthrow her, her campaign, her political ambitions. Because, of course, I'm sure that they hate women. They hate minorities. I mean, take your pick. The list goes on and on here. But the bottom line is, this is what Democrat politics has come down to. And then she tells us, perhaps the most important part of this clip, before I get distracted with just the money portion, she tells us she just wasn't sure back at the time she took that check. She didn't really see herself running for president. She thought she was done. She just couldn't help but wonder, it may just be time to call it quits. I mean, do you buy that for half a second? This is the most, I'm going to be nice and just say politically ambitious. I could say the most power-hungry, narcissistic, self-absorbed presidential candidate since Barack Obama, incidentally. But I'm just going to say politically ambitious. I'm going to be nice to Mrs. Clinton today. After seeing a little bit of that performance or hearing the clips, I feel a little sorry for her because she's in a dogfight with Bernie Sanders, the nutty professor. I mean, really, the nutty professor. Crazy, crazy Bernie Sanders. She's in a dogfight. She cannot convince enough people to vote for her unless they toss a coin. One that must be minted by the Clinton Foundation. And now she's in a fight for her life in New Hampshire. Looks like she's not going to win that one either. Now, she won Iowa, in fairness. But if you look at the way the delegates are going to be split, she doesn't have any lead. She's going to be behind, it looks like, if polling is correct, after New Hampshire. So we're just going to blame, we're going to say her political ambitions. We're going to be nice to her. Who really buys the fact that she wasn't going to run in 2016? I think come hell or high water, this woman was going to run. This is owed her. She believes that this is her right. She believes the presidency is as much her right as those that are voting Democrat believe it's their right to put their hands in the back pockets of the producers, of those that generate wealth in this country. So really, their ideas are the same. Anyway, got to stop here, take one more break. When we get back, we'll wrap up for the day, talk a little bit about President Obama and the speech he gave before the Baltimore Mosque, where he basically blamed Christians for problems that we have. So sit tight, be back in a minute. I'm not a full-time podcaster, but I play one on this show. My daytime job is running a small business called Huff Promotional Strategies. We are a graphic design and promotional products company that helps clients with a wide range of projects ranging from logos and websites to promotional products and apparel. We have experience working with well-known brands, small businesses like ours, and everything in between. So if you need help with marketing or promotional products, why not give us a try? Visit huffpromotional.com/podcast today for more information, and you'll find a 10% discount code that we will apply to your next order. We work with businesses, churches, schools, civic groups, sports leagues. You get the idea. Visit huffpromotional.com/podcast today to learn more and to get your 10% discount code. That's huffpromotional.com/podcast. Well, welcome back to The Antidote to Liberalism. I am your host, Todd Huff. Today is Thursday. It's February 4th. It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for joining us. You know, before the break, we've talked about Hillary. We've talked about Paul Ryan. One more thing that I wanted to talk about today. Well, I don't want to talk about it, to be honest, because I get sick of talking about President Obama. We're counting down here. What, we have 11 months now of the emperor's reign before we can move on. 11 months of Barack Obama remain. I mean, it's tempting to count down, but it's really not worth counting down to if we put someone in there like a Bernie Sanders or Hillary Clinton. We got a lot of work to do. And in spite of what Paul Ryan says, we don't need to simply just get our ducks in a row. We've got to get the argument out. We have to convince folks, and we have to show the American people, the candidates have to show the American people that there is something worth voting for there that is different, that is not like Mitch McConnell, that is not like John Boehner, that is not like, sorry, Paul Ryan, but what you're showing me. Not like that. It's someone that is inspired to stop liberalism, not make excuses for it at every turn. So I'm tempted to count down, but I'm also tempted to avoid that desire because what are we counting down to? But anyway, we have 11 months more of this, the current emperor that we have, Obama. And yesterday he spoke before a group of Muslims at a mosque in Baltimore. Now, this incidentally was a mosque that was under surveillance by the FBI because of some activities of one of their members. Regardless, President Obama goes there, gives a speech, and a couple of things he says that really is just problematic, to me anyway. At one point in the speech, he says this, quote, if we're serious about freedom of religion, and I'm speaking now to my fellow Christians who remain the majority in this country, we have to understand an attack on one faith is an attack on all of our faiths. End quote. So Christians, just to be clear, Mr. President, Christians are the ones that need to have this directed at them. Is that correct? I mean, you specifically say, if we're serious about freedom of religion, and I'm speaking now to my fellow Christians. So after telling the audience how great Islam has been for America throughout the American history, he then changes pace and says, now I'm going to talk to my Christian friends, those that share my belief. Of course, he doesn't use the word my belief in Jesus Christ. He just calls out the Christians, calls me out, speaking to me, because apparently I'm not serious about religious freedom because I have problems with some of the acts that have been committed in the name of Islam. I have problems with some of the teachings I hear coming from teachers of Islam. I have problems with something called Sharia law. I have problems with nations that are called things like the Islamic Republic of Iran. I have problems with 19 hijackers taking over four aircraft on September 11, 2001, crashing two into the World Trade Centers, one into the Pentagon, and one was overtaken by the passengers and crashed into a field in Shanksville, Pennsylvania. Killed nearly 3,000 people that day. But Obama didn't address that crowd. Obama addressed the Christian. You know, the Christian on 9/11 was the one sitting on the aircraft, sitting in their office in the World Trade Center, minding their own business, walking down the street of New York City when they witnessed the collapse of one of the trade towers, rushing up the stairwell as they were firefighters and police officers trying to save people that were trapped at the tops of these trade towers due to the acts of these crazy, maniacal, radical killers in the name of Islam. And I need to be addressed. If you're a Christian, you need to be addressed because you, in the eyes of President Obama, pose a more serious problem to freedom of religion than these jihadists, apparently. I mean, what happens when one faith attacks another, President Obama? Now what do you do? What happens when one faith isn't concerned about freedom at all? I mean, you look at this. You look at what Sharia law is, and you look at some of the practices, and you're going to tell me that that's free? You look at what's happened in Europe since this migrant crisis, and you tell me that these people are freer, that these Europeans are freer. These Europeans are terrified. And I get sick of saying this. I am not implicating everyone who says they're Muslim. That is not what I'm saying. But I am not going to deny facts. And facts are this. There are many that practice very hateful, evil, inappropriate things. Killings, beheadings, burnings of people alive, crucifixions, stoning, cutting off of limbs. I could go on. They do that in the name of Islam. They're not concerned about freedom of religion. In fact, if you listen to what these guys say, they're going to have worldwide dominance. I mean, Sharia law, establishing a caliphate, is about worldwide dominance. Yeah, you don't have to believe in Islam. Okay, you can pay a tax. Or you can move out of town. Or you know what? You may have to be executed. Those are your choices. Doesn't sound like freedom to me. We talked about the hijackers. What about, I don't know, what about the when a couple of guys who decide to make bombs out of pressure cookers go to Boston, kill three or four people, wound a couple hundred, by setting off bombs in the middle of the Boston Marathon near the finish line? I mean, what am I to do when two people grab weapons, walk into a Christmas party, and start firing and killing more than a dozen people in San Bernardino, California? Is that Christian's fault? Is that because I'm opposing religious freedom? He goes on to say that we have to reject a politics that seeks to manipulate prejudice or bias and targets people because of religion. Now, this is directed at the Christians. Who's targeting people because of religion? Look in the Middle East. Who are the people you see masqueraded out in front of the cameras in orange suits, forced to kneel on the ground and shot in the back of the head? Or they're decapitated. Or they're set on fire or drowned or dragged behind cars, ran over with tanks. Clearly the problem here is Christianity. You know, there is a group that thinks that, and those are the radical jihadist terrorists. That's the group that thinks the problems are the Christians. Those of us that are objective, those of us that look at this for what it is, can see that this is not about Christianity so much as it is about radical Islam. Patently absurd. It really is. This is patently absurd. Are there people that are Christians that have done things that they should not against Muslims? I'm sure that there are. And it should be stopped. This shouldn't happen. But I'll say this. There's a lot of anxiety that's built up among people that just want to live peaceably when they see a president who looks like he overlooks and excuses some of this behavior by those that are practicing things in the name of Islam. I don't care if the president thinks it's in the name of Islam or not. We're being told by the perpetrator that it is an act of obedience or worship or jihad or what have you, whatever it is. They're chanting Allahu Akbar. They're saying this in the name of Islam. You don't have to agree with that interpretation, President Obama, but the idea that this is not done in the name of religion is willingly ignoring reality. So I'm thankful I've only got 11 months more of this, but 11 months, this guy can really amp up the rhetoric, and with a few executive orders, who knows what this guy can accomplish. Anyway, guys, thanks for bearing with me. I'm trying to get this, you'll notice the podcast is a little longer today. I'm trying to get some practice here on the new length of what the show should be as I move towards streaming this on a conservative talk outlet, which my target for that is March 1st. So you're going to see me try a few different things out here as I try to get into a new groove. So anyway, as always, guys, I truly appreciate it. By the way, real quickly, wanted to mention that you probably by now have seen, of course, Mike Huckabee had dropped out, Rand Paul dropped out yesterday, and Rick Santorum. So the field is thinning, and we'll see where this goes, what this means, and where the support. None of those guys had big support. I think Rand had the most. Huckabee had a couple percent. So we're looking at maybe, 6 or 7% of the Iowa caucus vote went to those three guys. So we'll see what that means, who gets that support as the field continues to thin out. So anyway, got to wrap it up for the day. As always, guys, it's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for joining us. If you want to reach out, email us, todd@theantidotetoliberalism.com, or you can also connect with me on Twitter. So anyway, we're going to wrap it up. Thanks for listening to The Antidote to Liberalism. We'll see you tomorrow. Take care.
Thank you for listening to The Antidote to Liberalism. Your inoculations are now up to date. But since the disease of liberalism is ubiquitous and highly contagious, we need to see you again tomorrow. In the meantime, to help you boost your immunity, please rate, review, and subscribe to our podcast.